please, for the love of fucking God, stop signing up for these e-courses that every digital marketing guru is selling you that gives you this bullshit generic solution to business problems from guys that probably haven't owned a gym in years, if ever. If you're looking for a bespoke, custom tailored solution for your micro gym or fitness business, I'm your fucking guy. I only work with a small set number of clients per month. We currently have availability in that cohort, and I would love to work with you to customize HR and compensation plans. If you need branding work, if you want to talk about marketing and creating a client acquisition system, or you have other fires and problems in your business that none of these generic templates and e-courses and PDFs that people are selling seem to address. Go to my Instagram at WTF Gym Talk, shoot me a DM, and we will go back and forth with audio messages so I can find out more about what you've got going on and to see if I'm the right person for you. Guys, you do not have to be stuck with bullshit solutions. You can have something actually tailored to your problem. Go to my Instagram at WTF Gym Talk and shoot me a DM and let's begin the discussion. All righty. What is up, guys? It is Stu, and it is another episode of the What the Fuck Gym Talk podcast. I've got Jason Ackerman, 50% of the duo from Best Hour of Their Day. Jace, what's up, buddy?
I'm very excited to be on here. You know, I've had a few great accomplishments in life, obviously baby, wife, other things. But I'll tell you, at the top, above having a baby, above getting married to my soulmate, I wake up a couple weeks ago and my Instagram is blowing up. I'm like, what's happening? Seeing my picture, my background behind Stu Brower, I was like, this is it. I've peaked in life. It's all downhill.
It's all downhill from there, man.
It's been downhill. It's been downhill ever since. It's hard, you know, when the baseline goes up like that. Like, I have to compare everything to that moment.
It's a steep drop, brother. It's a steep drop, that fall from grace. But
that's the only thing I wish. I wish you didn't do it, because now, what am I? I'm 43. Life feels like it's over. I feel like I'm done.
We just have to get some more. I'll just have to find some more good screenshots of you. Just kind of, I'm going to set a Google reminder to just quarterly get one of those up there, just so. And like, it's like, I'm just picturing like, Jace is just there tying the noose. I need to go. Yeah. I need to save him. I gotta do a photo, do a green screen Instagram reel. But yeah,
no idea how you did it either. No idea. I don't care. I was just like, wow, I've made it. I've made it. And
it's,
you know,
amazing
what?
The tech that's in reels. Like, I'm, you know, I still have all my old big cameras and I walk around like a fucking dinosaur. Like, when I go and shoot content somewhere and someone sees me carrying around a giant fucking mirrorless camera, and then there's just like six TikTokers like at the gym that are just like, bro, you don't know how to use this? Just fucking use this. It's so funny. But yeah,
But there was a point in time as a box owner, like, I had to have those point and shoot cameras like on my side. And like, being a box owner and content has become so easy with your phone. I mean, whether it's right to Instagram, I mean, I used to upload 100 pictures at the end of every day, sit there, plug it in before I had a Mac, even like into a, you know, a Dell computer, and it would take like an hour to pull the computers off, upload them to TypePad or whatever. And now it's just boom, boom. It's like live as you're taking a picture. So it's become easier.
Can I say one thing I acknowledge? Because I'm such a fan of branding and like, especially the lexicon element, creating like sacred words. I love that you guys still run with the word box. Because it was all I knew at the height. And then I feel like it kind of had a decline. Like, it just wasn't used as often. I think, like, I don't know, maybe people, they didn't like to identify as that or whatever. And then you've got, you know, guys like me or whatever coming out using different terms, micro gyms and this, blah, blah. I love that you guys have stayed true to that. I think that's going to be such a good thing overall for your brand and the different things you guys are doing.
It's accidental. I think we don't put any thought behind that. Like, oh, I'm about to say gym, boutique, and then switch.
Yeah, it's natural. It's authentic. That's how you would actually say it. Yeah.
If anything, I find myself saying box. Like yesterday, for example, we went on like a weekend getaway, and somebody came up to us and was like, "Are you CrossFitters?" And then I said, "Oh yeah, what box do you go to in this area?" And they were like, "Huh?" I was like, "What gym?" You know, and that was someone that did CrossFit.
Yeah.
So that was,
it's an old school term. I mean, that's like, you know, that's an old school CrossFit term that I feel like kind of died out. And, but I think if anybody can revive that, it's you guys.
Yeah. I wonder if it's one of those things that's died out, or, you know, you've, I wouldn't say you shifted your focus, but it, you know, when you do other things, it's like you forget because you're kind of blind to it. Sure. I don't know. I do think it has, to be fair, died out a little bit. I think, you know, you say box even at a level one.
Yeah.
Some of the newer people are like, huh?
Yep.
So it's interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's a lexicon for the old schoolers, but I think it could definitely come on back, especially as CrossFit. I think there's a really good resurgence going on. I think the stuff Rose is doing is really good. I think there's a really cool opportunity to kind of revive that tribe, you know, post, you know, summer of 2020 when everything went down. And the one of the best ways to do it is, again, to include, you know, insider lingo and cool kid lingo that is a part of your tribe. That's one of the strongest, you know, ways to create a tribe.
Isn't that part of, like, if you had to define a cult?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So you said revive or something just now. Do you think CrossFit is reviving? I don't feel, and again, maybe it's one of those things where I'm like so into it, I don't see the outside. Mm-hmm. Do you think there was a dip after everything that happened in the Glassman and the tweet and all that? Or do you think
it
never...
Let's take even Glassman's, you know, silly tweets and shit out of it. Let's just do it like this. I think CrossFit as a brand was this thing that just, it didn't play well with others. It just wasn't involved. But like, you know, a Reebok sponsorship at the time, that was part of the rocket ship that kind of put us all on the map early on. I get that. But now that you're an established brand, you're the largest fitness franchise or fitness license model in the world. I like when they partnered with Noble. Noble's a come up brand. Noble, like, to, again, one of my favorite entrepreneurial stories is Noble. Can you imagine trying to compete with the Nike Metcon and fucking Reebok Nano as a solo dolo operation? Like, get the fuck out, the balls on those guys, and good for them. Like, I think partnering with them is great. I think a Whoop partnership is amazing. I just think those things also helped revive the brand, because, you know, it's kind of like arm in arm. Like, look, these are the kind of other brands we want to fuck with. And I just think previous to that, CrossFit just didn't play very well with others, at least other brands.
Yeah, I can see that. And I agree with you about Noble. It's one of those situations where you stay in your lane, you do what you're great at, and it'll work out. What was your opinion on Monster?
You know, I look at, you know, at first I'm like, ugh. But then, you know, you got to rewind, kids. Berkshire Hathaway is not in the business of giving two fucks what any CrossFit affiliate owner or CrossFitter thinks. They literally are in the business now of getting a return on this very large undisclosed amount investment. So, you know, for Coca-Cola, is it Pepsi or Coke that owns them?
Coke.
Okay.
I'm pretty certain.
Let's say it was $1 million is what they gave CrossFit for sponsor. Just make it that number up. That would be a line item of the lowest priority for Coca-Cola. Right. So, like, again, if I'm Rosa and I'm trying to do a couple things, I'm trying to show affiliates that, hey, we do have these amazing things we are going to do and make this better for you. I am trying to obviously improve the brand relationship with other companies who have similar core values, Noble, Whoop, things like that. But at the same time, you do have a true obligation, like a true obligation to investors, to get a return. And, you know, is, you know, maybe it's Monster this year just to get some attention. Like, okay, Coca-Cola did it. Cool. And then maybe the next brand. But I'll be honest, I know everyone's like, well, why can't like Zevia do it? Or like some healthy alternative brand? They don't have the fucking money. They don't have that kind of money to fucking give. They don't have Coca-Cola money. Very few people have Coca-Cola money. But I understand it from a business perspective. It did not bother me. I thought it was hilarious that they filled it with water and then everybody on the internet freaking out when people were pouring it all over their heads. I thought that was amazing from a marketing perspective. But yeah, I don't know. It doesn't bother me, because you got to understand the economic engine, which there is a very unique economic engine now behind CrossFit. There's no denying that.
Yeah, I bet you most people that were criticizing it were not A, entrepreneurs, or B, affiliate owners. And I think, I wonder if the same argument would have been true if an energy drink type company that wasn't owned by Coca-Cola or a big soda company would have had the same impact.
Sure.
You know, part of it was, you know, the whole fight against Big Sona by Glassman and Operation Sparkle or whatever that was, to kind of, you know, yeah, it's like, okay, now we're accepting money from our enemies, if you will. So, because, you know, let's not forget, they tried to take CrossFit down, right? Mm-hmm. They really tried. And it seemed like it was just Glassman versus them. He was defending CrossFit. So, but I agree with you. But I wonder if I don't have a good example off the top of my head, but some locally owned energy drink that still isn't, you know, good for you, quote unquote.
Sure.
Would have had the same impact.
Yeah. I mean, like, let's say, let's use a brand like Kind Bar. You familiar with Kind Bar?
Yeah. Right? I mean, it's a chocolate bar.
It's exactly. It's a, like, for everyone, for Kind Bar from a brand perspective, if you were to walk around town and ask 1,000 people, they'd be like, oh, that's way healthier than,
that's
and you
healthy,
and me,
yeah.
Yeah. You and me sit here and we're like, eh, it's still 45 grams of fucking sugar, essentially. I you know, something has to make all those nuts stick together, buddy. Like, something has to make all that shit stick together. Anyway. Like, you could have a Kind Bar, but again, it's just one of these things. Like, the games are really expensive. And Glassman, I did this entire YouTube reaction video that went Team Richie, Craig Richie, that kid, the YouTuber, he interviewed Glassman back when a lot of the changes were made, regionals, all that. And I was some of the that's some of the best interviewing I had seen done, not by Craig, no offense to him, but just like Glassman talking about it, where he was like, man, listen, the games don't make me any money. We lose money. Well, again, if I'm Berkshire Hathaway, I'm fucking owned by Warren Buffett. I'm not in the business of losing money. So I'm like, okay, well, where's the bleed? Well, the bleeds are at the games. Well, all right, well, let's get a bunch of sponsorship. Yeah, but some of that sponsorship doesn't align with our core values. Like, listen, guys, you can't fucking have it all right now.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. You know, who cares that Monster was on the wall? Like, does that really matter? Did that impact the competition? Did it impact, you know, that Justin or Tia won? No. So if you know the company you love and support is now going to be, you know, positive with the games and potentially it should trickle down to affiliates, I was all for it. You know, I was drinking those. My buddies were like, you know, people were texting me. I was like, it's water. You know, don't worry. It's water.
No, yeah, I get it. I think, again, it's not going to be the last of a shock sponsorship or partnership that some people maybe have an issue with for one reason or another. We're also in a day and time where even people like who are CrossFitters who are like the CrossFit Games, that's your fucking palooza. That is your thing. Like, you're so jacked, but you're still like find some reason to get bitchy about something and complain about something. Even when you're in this utopia of fitness and fun and friends and affiliate owners, it's like, dude, just relax. Enjoy Madison. Just fucking soak in the sun. Like, relax. Just chill. Less anger towards Monster.
And let's be real. 95, if not higher, percentage of the people bitching drink something. I mean,
gym owners just live on Bang and fucking Monster and caffeine in general.
Yeah, let's not pretend Bang and Killcliff and Fit 8 even, you know, just because there's zero calories or sugar. I mean, Monster makes the same. It's, I bet you if you lined up the ingredients side by side, there's a ton of overlap. Yeah,
it's all the same. All right, so let's, you know, I did that that green screen video over your beautiful face, and you know, we've talked about this before, the best hour of the day argument, and I think this would probably be the easier one for us to converse on. You guys obviously run with it from a podcasting naming perspective, and you guys truly, I think, from my understanding, when you guys are working with affiliate owners, it's like, yeah, like try to make it their best hour of the day. Like, are you going to beat the kid winning the T-ball game or an orgasm or getting a promotion work? Probably not. But more times than not, those things aren't going to happen in their life. So at least when they show up to the gym, just put – essentially what you're saying is put in the extra effort to make the day better if it sucked and to be a positive note if it was a great day. It just like adds – it's a cherry on top to an already great day. Is that – am I summing that up right?
Yeah, you know, we had Dr. Sean on our show, and I told him, like, it's you, it's me, it's Sean, it's a MDV. You know, we all put out very similar content, and I think we all are speaking the same language. Like, you're just from the South, and we're from the Northeast, and MDV's on, like, we have an accent, right? But I think at the end of the day, we're all saying the same thing. Like, we say best hour of their day. And at the end of the day, I truly hope it wasn't your best hour. But if it was, first of all, that's not a bad thing.
No, it's
there are
not.
Plenty of days in my garage training by myself. It's my, if not the best hour, like it's hard to say, okay, this is better than a quality hour with my daughter, but it feels good. Like it's okay if that's what happens. I hope out of 7 days a week, that doesn't happen every day.
Yeah.
But if it does, it's okay. I think if it does, there should be conversations happening with your members. Like, why is that happening? But until you make those connections with your members, you can't talk about, well, I'm going through a divorce or I have a shitty job and I hate my boss or, you know, any other number of reasons that it isn't as good as their time in the gym. So,
yeah.
Yes, I think it should and it shouldn't be the best hour of their day.
It my thing on it is always, again, I generally come from like this marketing branding angle on some of this stuff. You know, I see, you know, best hour of the day became kind of a very cliche. I remember, like, you know, doing, you know, maybe it was 2017 or 2016. It seemed like at probably every fifth call I had with a new potential client, like a gym owner, I do my little audit on their social media. And I'm like, everyone's running with this tagline of like the best hour of their day. And I'm like, because they heard it somewhere, maybe it was you guys, maybe it was someone else. And they're like, oh my God, yeah, that's perfect. That's a great tagline. I'm going to run with that. And they just do it without actually thinking and putting thought behind it. And there really is, like, saying you want to create the best hour of your day, you can completely use that in marketing and on a website and whatever it may be. Just as long as the rest of everything else that you speak of lends itself more to the monologue you just gave, like that backing up statement that, like, you know, we actually want the rest of your life to be the best hour of the day. However, we also want to be a sanctuary for when life isn't really going your way or you just need some you time.
Yeah, and I also think a lot of the people saying it don't put in the work to actually make it happen. It's not easy. Just because you show up and coach a 4 o'clock class on a Monday afternoon doesn't mean you're doing everything necessary to make it someone's best hour. You know, part of that is showing up prepared so you have an organized class, thinking about who's attending class, so you think about scaling options, because that impacts someone's, you know, the time in the box, right? If you give someone the wrong scaling option and they feel like a failure walking out the door, yeah, that's not going to be the best hour of their day. It's, you know, are you walking around? How's your energy? All of those things go into it. So it's more than just like, well, I coach CrossFit, it's going to be the best hour of your day. Like, yeah, there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes to make that happen.
Correct. And it's also, again, cultural. Like, I think CrossFit boxes in the, especially maybe still now, you'd have a better answer for this than I would, but like still now, maybe now, previously, the gym was somewhere where like you could almost gauge someone's retention, how good the retention is by the amount of minutes that people stayed in the gym afterwards, right? Like when they hung out, right? That was a very cool kind of qualitative / quantitative test. Where it's funny, where culture shifts, like again, if you go to like my model, it's so funny. I had a gym owner. He's a he is an affiliate owner, I believe. Come by Charlotte and came and hung out. And one of the things he's like, man, people when they get done, like they wipe, they say goodbye, whatever. They wave the front desk and they're out. He's like, what's with that? And you just tell he came from a different cultural gym kind of structure. I'm like, oh, they're getting ready to head to whatever the best hour of their day is. That one's maybe going to the bar to meet some friends. That one's going home to see their kids. Like, I don't know, man. It just like my culture is more of a get in, get fit, be cool, be nice with people, knock it up, high five, but then get in, get the fuck out. Get in, get the fuck out. There's just not from a, so, you know, there's no space. We're not trying to make it a cool hangout area necessarily. Not that that's better or wrong or right, but it was interesting to see that, because I remember that even when I was CrossFit South End. I remember telling people, I'll know my retention's in trouble when people stick around less. And that was 100% because that was the culture of CrossFit South End, 100%.
I don't think there's anything wrong. Like, it can still be someone's best hour.
Sure.
Getting it. I mean, like I said, I'm training almost exclusively in my garage. And that's a very enjoyable hour for me. It's time. It's the same thing I would want for members. It's time away from the family. Like, my earbuds, I don't put on a stereo, put earbuds in, so I'm just like engulfed in the music I want to listen to, which is usually just Dave Matthews Band, to be honest. It's chill stuff. Like, I'm not into, like, it's like my quality time by myself. And if you ask me, I'd be like, that was a great, it's rarely an hour, like that was a great 30 minutes. Like, and that 30 minutes allows me to be such a better human being. So I think a lot of it is like, hey, we think that time in the gym is the best hour, but it's the ramifications, if you will, of what's happening after. Like, I look better in the mirror, so I'm happier. I feel good about myself, so I'm happier. It forces me to, or maybe not forces me, but training typically encourages you to make better nutrition decisions. All of those things, you know, go into it. So I don't think there's anything wrong if people come in and leave within that hour. Because also, there's a ton of community stuff going on within that time, right? They're still chatting. They're still high-fiving, like you said. And if you want to be the box or micro gym or whatever you have where people hang out, like Fern's Wall, my partner in Best Hour, says, you know, you don't have to work out to hang out. And he gets people that like don't leave. And he's got the space set up for that. So if you That's want cool. that, first of all, something we always ask is like, well, is your space even inviting for that? If you walk in and it's sure. like there's no place to sit other than where you throw your bag down, you're not going to encourage that behavior, which is absolutely okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I want to get into, and again, this is more like, I think, Fern's charge. I'm not sure where you're, I forget kind of where your stance was on it. You guys had a podcast topic that I listened to the whole thing. I thought it was great. Talking about the day you sell the gym shouldn't be the best day ever. And I agree. I think for most micro gyms, they're going to sell. It's not going to be a triumphant sell like what you would, like when you tell people you sold your business and everyone has some kind of like amazing exit millions of dollars type scenario. Like this is generally for the amount of sweat and equity and money you put into it. Most people are not walking away in the black or above. Just they're not. It's just going to walk away at a loss. It's not a buyer's market. There's really no reason to buy your gym short of unless you have an amazing lease that is below market value. Like that's the number one valuation right now. When I look at a micro gym, if they have a lease that is locked in for a period of time, that is well below market value. That's the biggest thing. Then the equipment. And then again, maybe the business, but probably not well, for also, most
contracts, right? I think a lot of people, you know, because I have sold three boxes and one of them was a very lucrative sale, which was one of my best days. Like,
was that the first? That was the first one you sold, right? The earliest sale.
It was like simultaneous with my second, which was just to my partner. So it was more kind of black and white. Here's what it's valued at. I was still very pleased with it, but not like the first one. And a lot of people reach out, like, "What should I do?" And I'm like, "Hey, do you have contracts?" And they're like, "No." I'm like, "Cool. Your gym's worth whatever your equipment is."
Yeah.
You know, and they're like, "What do you mean?" I'm like, "If you sell, you can have a mass exodus tomorrow. I wouldn't buy it." That doesn't mean, you know, and then ultimately it's worth what someone's willing to pay for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And even with contracts, the reality is if let's say you have 250 members at $200 a pop and they're on contracts and I buy it from you, there better be a collections agency tied to this because people can still quit. Like people are like, "Oh, they're locked into a contract." Yeah. Well, they tear up that credit card or that debit card, and then what? You got to literally, like what every big Lobo gym does, they hire a collections agency, and from a 15 to 30% differential, that's what that collections agency is going to take to hunt them down and threaten people with fucking, you know, credit score diminishings and all this other stuff. Like, that's the reality of it. Like, even having contracts, they're only as benefit, they only have any value if you actually have an enforcement strategy in play.
Yeah, and we've helped quite a few affiliates have that like chargeback issue, and Wattify helps out a little bit. So certainly, because people don't realize, okay, you have a contract. All I have to do is cancel my credit card, or even reach out to the bank and say, "Hey, cancel this auto payment," and they'll do it, and then it becomes litigation and all that. So certainly, that's a huge part of it. The big picture that we were talking about there is typically when people sell their box, it's because they're unhappy with what's going on at their box. And then even though my sale of Albany CrossFit was super financially lucrative and I'm very pleased with it, it also came at a point in time where I was getting very burned out on my affiliate. So I probably wouldn't have not sold it. Like a lot of things came into play with that. But being burned out and being frustrated definitely played a role in it.
Yeah. It's interesting, that conversation. I really wanted to make sure because I don't truly believe if you're an independent micro gym, you have an amazing opportunity to absolutely love the work you do. It's gonna be fucking incredible. You do have the opportunity to make a lot of money, but it's what you do with that money, because there's very few case studies that show me otherwise. There's very little wealth in single location, independently owned micro gyms. Wealth. Now, there's cash. You can make money doing it. But generally, a lot of that money, you start, refeeding the beast. I was just looking at a buddy of mine buying another 15 fucking Rogue Echo bikes when I know he's trying to also do some other future plays. It's like, I cannot wait for the day. Like, I'll be retiring soon. And I bought that building and I'm going to lease it out to someone who, if I pay $13 a square foot, they're going to pay market rate of $33. What in the world would I stay a gym? Like, why in the world at a certain point would I ever, ever keep a gym in a building that could make at $13 a square foot when I could do $33? So I talked to a lot of gym owners, like, I don't know if you're going to be a gym owner forever. If you want to be, great. But you need to have kind of a long-term strategy, because if you don't have one, what are you going to coach classes when you're 55? I don't think so. So what are you going to do? And that's where, like, I taught people, like, that next stage, because I think a lot of gym owners kind of get shamed. And I've seen some guys that jump ship during COVID and shut down their brick and mortar, and they open online thing, and they're making $7,000 flush a month with minimal overhead. And it's way more than they ever took home from the brick and mortar gym, unfortunately. So, like, I just kind of curious. I don't think there's enough of us talking about what is the next stage. Okay, you're doing well, but then what? You can't just stay doing well at the gym. You either sell it, you become a shareholder, you replicate it in a franchise or license model, or you liquidate it, which is the worst scenario. Except right now, liquidating your equipment is actually a pretty good deal.
I would throw in one more option there, and that would be, you get the box running to the point that it can afford a full-time, you know, owner operator.
Yeah.
And that'd be the only thing I would have done potentially differently. If I would have kept my box, not made that big sale, it was making enough money that I could have paid someone realistically six figures, still kept six figures for myself, never touched, you know, so it would have taken a few years to recoup, you know, not making that sale, but I would still own it, and you'd have the option to potentially sell it down the road, or just have that nice trickle in income.
Yeah. And that's for me, the second one, shareholder, that's essentially where you now announce your GM, like, this GM is now the CEO and I'm a shareholder and I sit in the back and maybe I consult a little with them, whatever, but I collect a passive check. But that passive check, like, and I've done this, I've had gyms ascend to shareholder. They have now named their head operator as the CEO. And then that head operator got to hire someone underneath them to replace their position. You're still only insulated by like one or two human beings before you're back in it. So I've got an owner, he becomes shareholder. 3 years later, his CEO's husband gets relocated across the country on a gig that is too good to pass up. Well, guess what? Now Mr. CEO or Mr. Shareholder has to get back into the business for another year and a half while he finds someone new and redevelop. The problem with the micro gym, if you're a single location, and I hate to, you know, shoving, popping people's, you know, the bubbles here, you're only insulated by a couple people. It's not like the fucking margins on a micro gym allow you to have six full-time people in front of you that would prevent you from having to get back into the business if the wheels started falling off.
And I think you also have to really question yourself. For most, it's their baby. Are you going to be okay handing it off?
Yeah.
Right? That's part of it. I think you really need to be in that headspace that, like you said, you're only a phone call away from being back in full time. But assuming all goes well, are you going to be able to show up every day and not take out the garbage if it's sitting there? Are you going to be able to, you know, not have input over some of the small details that happen at the box? So I don't think a lot of box owners can do that. I think it takes someone who's looking at it from the perspective of, okay, this is how I either go on to the next venture, or I'm making enough money that it's okay and I don't care as much about it. But I think a lot of box owners would struggle with that. I mean, for me, I made that sale and I was off. I was like tuned out. I would still show up for classes, but I was like so done. A, because I was happy with the sale, and B, because, like I said, I was burned out. It was an opportunity to enjoy fitness again.
Yeah.
But I think you'd have to really dig deep to make sure that's a smart move for you.
I agree. And so, you know, I got a lot of people like, okay, cool. Well, then, you know, you're hitting me with a problem. You're not giving me a solution. What's the fucking solution? How do I develop wealth if I own a micro gym, if you're saying, Stu, that it can't be done in one location? Again, money can be happening. And then what you do, you could deploy that money to real estate, you know, get a PFP and get a bunch of index funds, something super safe that's going to go at 8 to 10% and sit on that for 40 years. And then you're good to retirement. Like, there are things you can do. I'm curious, like, because I know you guys work with a ton of gym owners. What kind of wealth strategies, like, do you guys have a lot of conversations with, like, the end state? Like, okay, you're 33 years old and you have a gym doing $42,000 gross. Your profit margin's 17 to 23%, you know, it's not bad. What's the plan? Like, what are you doing in 15 years?
We get there with a lot of gyms. I think, as you know, like, most gyms are not even close to that.
Sure.
When we start, like, most gyms, our first priority is not having a billion different discounts for all your, right? Like, that's the first, assuming we get there and now we get it profitable, Yes, you know, probably within a year for a lot of our boxes, it's like, okay, what's your long-term goal? And, you know, what do you want out of this life? I think a lot of people never think that far in advance. And part of it is that terrible mindset of, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm never going to be rich or wealthy. I like that term wealth, because it's not just six figures a year is not wealth.
Oh, yeah.
Right. You know, and I think a lot of box owners are like, I'll never get rich opening a gym. And I felt that way. I've told the story. When I opened my box in 2007, I was like, I can make $36,000 a year doing this. Sign me up. Like, that was more money than I ever drew. I was making 24 at Gold's Gym, 24,000. So I think that mindset needs to shift, you know, and a lot of what Dr. Sean talks about, and you talk about that idea of turning pro, like, we need to make that shift in not just CrossFit, but micro gym as a whole. I don't know enough about it, but I think the micro gyms you probably work with that aren't CrossFits go into it with a slightly different mindset. They're franchising. They probably need a little bit more money up front. They're probably, you know, the barrier to start a CrossFit is like literally $1,000.
Yeah, it's minimal.
Like, and you know, that's a whole nother story about like why you're not getting buy-in from your coaches. Because if they don't have the balls and money to start their own box, why do you think they're going to be super driven and motivated people at your business?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that mindset needs to shift. Like, you can get well. I mean, I'm not here to brag about it. And I don't know that I'm wealthy, but I can stop working like right now. I don't need to do best hour. I don't need to do really anything else. Like, and part of that is we live within our means. We're not dumb. We've made some, like you said, really good investments. Every Monday, I put money into a mutual fund, like slow grow. Like, I'm really smart with, you know, I've got my Jewish background, which is part of it. I've never lived, yeah. No matter how wealthy I become, I'll drive
below
a Honda,
your means and invest
in a Subaru. I'll drive it for 15 years. So, you know, you have to do some of that stuff, but you need to, if you're going to open a gym, you need to go into it thinking, what's my out one day? And I can get wealthy doing this, or else there's so many other options in this world.
Yeah. And I love you talk about the wealth thing. So someone came by last month and they offered us $3.7 million for my building. And we said, no, like that happens at least once every 8 weeks.
That falls. Really? You turned that down?
Yeah. And it took a couple of weeks and my business partner, I'm 51, he's 49. He wanted to slit my throat.
So, I mean, almost $2 million for yourself.
Yeah. And so, no, it's like, I'm only 35. What am I going to get rid of? Like, this is I worked really, really, really hard. I saved all my money. I did everything right by the business. And that allowed me the opportunity to sit at this kind of table of these commercial, you know, a commercial real estate scenario. I'm not going to get rid of that already. And someone's like, man, baby, 3 point, whatever. I'm like, bro, that's the difference between wealth and rich. Rich, you see it in a checking account. And guess what? Money in a checking account doesn't do you dick. Wealth, you don't see it in a checking account. It's other places. I'd have to do a 1031 exchange because capital gains tax, especially if Biden's new thing passes, would have been 40%. And I just got to roll it into another project. I'd have to roll into another multifamily that I'd invest in or some other kind of, you know, hardline investment. And I think wealth is a topic that's not talked about enough in the micro gym industry, because we're all talking about what to do right now, how to sell, how to retain, how to tour, how to fucking coach, how to do this. No one's talking about what should be thinking about in 20 years. But if you had a W-2, the day you fucking get hired, they ask you, so we contribute a match or 401k, 4 points, you know, to the dollar. They talk to you about it the day you fucking sign up. But here's all of us playing the independent micro gym owner entrepreneur game, and we're all just fucking just like, we're literally just staring two steps ahead. And I get it, because we don't want to fall on our face. But I think there's an opportunity in the market right now to zoom out and show some case studies of how to use the money from your micro gym to create long-term wealth.
Well, and I think something you touched on that's really important, and it took me a little bit to shift. I think it was in a book or something, but, you know, there we were talking about just diversifying, and owning real estate is diversifying, and it's still your money. Like, just because, like you said, it's not in your bank account, like you have a $3.7 million asset, which, by the way, is going to be worth more in five. You know, it's smart. You have real estate, you have the stock market, you have some cash, maybe you have crypto, like whatever you're doing, like, you should be diversifying. And I think real estate's often, I mean, more box owners should seek that out first and foremost. And I'm sure you dive into that. And, you know, I think some of this can be attributed to the micro gym industry and the fitness industry as a whole. But I also think some of it is just attributed to life. And I, you know, I had a lot of influence from my parents, but a lot of my influence has just come from my peers that are smarter than me about it. Like as CrossFit employees, we have opportunities for 401ks, and I match as much as they'll allow me to. Like I put the 19.5, I think that's what it is a year. Yep. And I'd contribute immediately, like take 100% of my paycheck till I hit this. There's people that have the same job as us or work, you know, for CrossFit that don't touch it. And I'm like, what's going on? Like, sure, maybe you have four kids and I have one, but it would still be a priority if I had four kids. You know, I would figure it out. Like, I cannot believe people don't run after free money.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. It's crazy. It's so funny. You talked about like keeping the Subaru around. So I got I had my one kid and I got a vasectomy immediately after.
You, and someone really after one?
Immediately after one.
How old is your kid?
She's just turned, she's like four and change.
So four, it gets better because mine's a monster.
Yeah, I know. Yours is brand new. Yours is fresh out the oven.
I hate my baby.
Dude, having a kid, I'm not going to lie, especially as a dad. You have a girl, right?
Yeah, we have a baby girl.
Same here. It is not very entertaining for fathers for the first year. And then a year hits and then they're mobile and they're doing a lot more moving. And then you see some resemblance of a personality. But then at two is when the personality and the communication just have a fist fight every fucking day because they don't know how to say what they want. But then like three and four is a trip. It's fucking hilarious. It's a great time. You're in for good times.
She's getting there. But wait, before you move on.
Yeah.
So you had an office. Are you married?
No, I'm no longer married. Me and my ex-wife were still best friends. It was one of the things. I actually had Sean Pastuch interview me on my entire divorce because I think as an entrepreneur,
check that out. Is that on his show or your show?
It's on his show. Yeah.
Okay.
It's called Entrepreneurship is Lonely. And essentially, I called Sean. He's a good buddy of mine. I'm like, man, listen, no one I think will interview me as good as you can on this, but nobody talks about getting divorced as an entrepreneur. And I think it has a black cloud around it. And I kind of want to share my story. So, anyways,
but that's your daughter's
mother,
mom.
Yes.
And then you, sorry if this is redundant.
No, you're good.
I'll go listen to the show. But so you got a vasectomy while you were still married, or was it?
No,
after
it was after we separated. So in North Carolina, you have to be legally separated for a year before you can file for divorce.
Right.
So as soon as we separated, but even after the day she was born, I was like, that's it, one and done. I didn't even want one.
We're debating that right now. But here's what I'm hearing. You had not balls isn't the right term, but right, like like during your separation, you're like, I don't want to get canceled, so I'm trying to figure out how to say this, but you're like, I'm about to go out there.
Yeah,
and be
I'm not
crazy.
Trying to knock up some chicks. Yeah, I'm not trying
and
to.
And I don't
want
to have to worry about
exactly.
That. So that I'm was saying you had like confidence. Confidence.
And it's also because it's like, okay, pregnancy happens, unfortunately, not planned all the time. My daughter is an example of that. And that, when you're me and I'm like, holy shit, I was in the middle of buying a building a new house. I had this new urban movement idea. Like, that destroyed my world for the first like 3 months that I realized my wife at the time was pregnant. I mean, I thought life was fucking over. I was like, and it's such a fucked up perspective, but I never wanted a kid. Now I'm beyond grateful. Like, God, like, bless that I've got my daughter, but that's it. I will call the shots. If I ever want to have another one, it's good because I went to a doctor and I paid the money to have him fix my shit. And then I can go out and have another kid. But where this was all coming from.
Snip, snap.
That's right. Yeah. Back and forth. I'm sure there's no long-term bad effects to that.
The office. Wait, one more question. Yeah. Last question about your daughter. Is she allowed to curse?
She, here's the thing with cursing. I don't mind if she curses as long as she's using it in a way that is conducive. Like if she just like was saying fuck you dad to something, like that's not whatever, you stub your toe and you swear, I'm not gonna be upset with you, right? Like you're actually upset about something that you know if she's old enough to look at something happening in Kabul and wants to be like, what the hell dad, like I don't mind. But if you say it to hurt someone's feelings or you saying it just to say it, that would not be a go-to. I picked that up from Sean. I asked him the exact same question.
I like that. I think that's fair.
But anyway, going back to this, you said the Subaru and I instantly thought, I don't know if you run into this. Business owners who are like, oh, I believe below my means. And they drive a Subaru that's 15 years old too. but they got six fucking kids. I'm like, bro, like, maybe if you're gonna have six kids, starting a risky brick and mortar business is not the right move. Like, when someone gets on a call with me and they're like, man, all these things are going wrong and my wife's flipping out because she works full time and we have four kids. I'm like, bro, I'm not gonna lie. I don't think owning a gym is the right thing for you to do if you've got to feed four mouths like yesterday. Like,
that's not living within your means, technically,
yeah,
right?
You're living above your means.
Yeah, I mean, kids are an expense, right? Oh, so if
incredible.
Be smart about it. Like, there's plenty of options to not have six kids. A vasectomy.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. You probably get one for free.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They're not expensive.
I mean, maybe you don't want to.
My vasectomy, I think, was surgeon. $1,500, $1,600 all in.
That's one of those things you want to pay top dollar for.
Way cheaper than a kid. Way cheaper than a kid.
Our bill with insurance was like 10 grand. I was like, did you cover anything? Like, we were here for a night. You gave us a pacifier. But yeah, no, I agree. It's like six, because that's what we're talking about. Like, we just had this discussion yesterday, and it's more than obviously just the money, but it's like, okay, we need to be prepared. If we have another child, we know, like, hey, we need X amount of hundreds of thousands to be ready for that.
Yeah, I get it, man. And I understand why people want a second kid. Like, I'm like, I don't know, I'll get her a Tesla bot. Elon Musk just debuted a Tesla bot. I'm going to get her a fucking Tesla bot. She'll be just fine.
Can you have sex with it?
I hope the Tesla
bot and
real dolls. If you're familiar with real dolls, R-E-E-L.
Of course,
yeah.
I watch Howard Stern. You
of
know?
Course, of course, right? Yeah. I hope they do a collab. That would be incredible.
Put my order in now, Elon. Or brunette, please.
Send it to Fern's house.
How have you not gotten canceled? I'm always like, I think, you know what it is? When you're speaking from your heart,
sure.
And you really like have no ill intention. Like you say offensive shit. I
just like to fuck around. Yeah.
But it's also like, first of all, I think this was something Dr. Sean and I spoke about. Like, you cannot offend us.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's literally nothing you can say to me. Right. And you can make fun of my religion. Like, you can call my daughter ugly. Like, I mean, she's not right. But you, whatever it is, like, I'll be like, okay, like, cool.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's how you feel. People get so offended.
The closest I ever came, I actually had to send Sean the copy of the audio of it because I already published it. I did a podcast. I did it off the cuff. There was a Morning Chalk Up article, Jace, that they talked about CrossFit Games female athletes getting dick pics and stuff in the DM. And I just did this off color comedic relief commentary for like 15 minutes on it. And I either got from people, that was the funniest thing I had ever heard. And then it was on the other front. It was, you know, a very small amount of people, like, not very happy. But like, that's probably the closest I've ever come. Cause I think you're right. I think as long as people truly believe it's authentic and there's no true hostility, it's just someone talking shit and just with no real ill intent. I might be dumb or maybe ignorant on a topic. That doesn't mean I like wish harm on everybody. I'm an evil human.
And I also doubt you were like, hey, send dick pics to, you know, Tia. You're like, you know, I didn't hear
yeah,
it, but
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
sure there's like, you know, and I think we discussed this before, like seeing comedians and growing up with comedians,
yeah.
You're like, you go watch a comedian. I saw Sebastian Maniscalco like two weeks ago over at Red Rocks, and he like made Jewish jokes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's funny. Like that shit is real. And it's funny, right?
Tim Dillon, that's my new shit, right? Tim Dillon is he's incredible.
He's great. He's on Rogan.
Yeah, he's on Rogan a ton. But his monologues, his actual podcast show is incredible from just like a solo dolo monologue every day. It's so good.
I'm sure you like Bill Burr.
Of course. An angry Irish kid dude? Of course I like Bill Burr.
Yeah, exactly.
The one thing I wanted to also jam on, I know you guys have talked about, and this was just recent, and you know, I'm sure you and Sean have had conversations of this too. Personal training, affiliates, micro gyms that are doing personal training in the business. And while you guys are like, hey, it's fine, cool, whatever, but it's not inherently your business model. Talk to me a little bit more about that.
Yeah. And you know, it was so frustrating having Sean on because I love the guy. And, you know, we would talk like this and we're like, man, I was like, why are we recording this? We agree on everything. It's our angle is a little different. Our model is like, hey, you did this because you love group classes. You love the energy. You do want to make it the best hour of people's days. Personal training doesn't really fit that. Now, one of the two things we often say about our coaching, it's like, we understand you need money. Like, this is a business, but we also, you know, 1A and 1B would be that needs to be fun. And I personally left the training industry you know, for CrossFit. There was a brief period where I was like, I'm going to become a teacher because I'm out of this thing. And then I found CrossFit and I stayed in it, but I left because I hated, I was so burned down on personal training. And there was a lot wrong with that. I wasn't charging enough. I, you know, was taking the wrong clients. You know, I was dealing with mostly middle-aged women that wanted to vent about their husbands. Yes, you know, I slept with many of them, but yeah, no, just kidding. Don't cancel. But you know, it was, you know, I was just burned out and, you know, I found CrossFit and I love this group training model. So it's not that you shouldn't do personal training. There's a time and a place. That's all. Like if it helps the bottom dollar and bottom line of the gym, certainly think about it. It's going to make your members better movers. Like, let's not even mince words. Like, they're going to get more in that 1 hour than they do in a group class. Now, if that discrepancy is huge, I would argue that you're probably not a great coach. Like, at some point, they should be getting more. It's one-on-one attention versus one-on-eight, 16, whatever. But the better you get as a coach, the better you should be at bridging that gap, or at least minimizing that distance. So there's so much to it. The issue is there are people out there that are like PT first, or, you know, and I hear that. I don't know who I'm talking about specifically. I don't know whose company that is. I don't know if that's Dr. Sean
That's me.
Is that you?
I'm PT first. Yeah, I'm PT first.
I hear it. So again, my point was going to be like, it's not that you shouldn't do PT. My attitude is it shouldn't be your first line of defense.
Yeah, no. And I think those are a lot of fair points. I think where I came into it when I was a CrossFit gym, after I kind of got out of my 2010 to 2012, where I was probably a very novice CrossFit affiliate owner. But when I really sat back, I'm like, this is definitely the most complex fitness program in the world. Like, it embodies the most complex things in group fitness, period. So probably teaching these people in a one-on-one setting up front, like you said, they'll be a better mover when they get the group. The other thing that I actually really liked about PT first, and a lot of gyms do not like this, I think they agree with me, but they don't want to admit it. When you're evaluating a coach and you're like, hey, listen, okay, so you got class today and today's workout is deadlifts, toes to bar and push-up burpees. So you've got three movements and you've got 15 people in class, get at it. And then you look, you're like, why is her deadlift look like a cocktailed shrimp? Like, what the fuck's wrong with her? And you're like, oh, well, I was going over to do it. And then she was done with her deadlifts already. She went on to the push-ups. So I didn't really get a chance. Or like, oh, I was going to, and then I had to triage that guy over there who looked like Quasimodo. And I'm like, okay, fair enough. I understand that. It's a group class. There's a lot going on right now. However, though, Mr. Trainer, we're going to go to PT first model. And this is Sally. Sally just joined 2 days ago. Today, I'm going to have you spend an hour with her, and I want you to teach her the deadlift, toes to bar, or modifications as such, and push-up form, and make it a push-up burpee. Now, I can watch this fuckface coach from a distance, spend 1 hour, and watch him flounder like a goddamn asshole because he doesn't truly have the craft and skill to coach these movements to one person when that's his only job. He's able to get away with it in a group class because there's so much other shit going on. So he's just throwing attaboys and good jobs and all that bullshit. I think it smokes out shitty coaches.
I can't argue with that. I agree with you. I think you can hide. I've said this over and over again. Presence and attitude is the most important criteria, but don't rely on it. Let it, right? So, and I think what all of us have in common is we speak in these absolutes and we speak hyperbolically. I don't know if I use that word right. But because we're drawing attention, right? It's social media. So that's a big part of it. And I do want to be clear. We promote onboarding, right? So that is kind of PT first, which again, it's like, all right.
Is that where people come in on like Tuesday, Thursdays at 6 p.m. and they're in a small group and they follow kind of a system for a couple of weeks? Like the old
system, but we recommend one-on-one for 3 seconds.
Got it. Okay, cool.
But for the most part, now I own my third affiliate. There was zero onboarding. Like you came in into class. However, I was coaching 50% of the classes and my partner, who was also a level three, was coaching 50%. So it's like you're getting one of us. So I know we were also at the time following CrossFit.com, one workout a day. So at its longest, we had, 20 minute workout, we had 40 minutes of coaching going on. Most coaches or trainers can't do that. I really like what you said. It does weed out shitty coaching because that is a problem. I like that where Well, if you can't coach the deadlift to one person, to how one can person, I expect you to coach it to 16? What's interesting in all of this, you keep saying push-up burpees. Why are you quantifying the burpee?
So I made this decision personally maybe like 5 years ago. I was like, I'm never doing a burpee again without doing an actual strict hand-release push-up at the bottom. Ever in my life will I ever do it again. And I just made the decision because I'm like, I'm already down there. I might as well get stronger. And, you know, you see, we've all seen like the flail and the chest up, downward dog, the pop up. And like, and when you do it really good, because the only reason like a burpee, if we, I mean, you're a coach, I feel like I have a great conversation with this. It's 50% of it is gravity. You literally go to the ground. And the only thing that really is exhausting is the push up and then an explosive kick in of the hips. So you're really talking from a metabolic perspective, not that expensive. So if you can get really good at push-ups and you could pop off that ground quick, it is not that metabolic of an expensive movement anymore, and it no longer has you fucking flail, you know, you're not dying. So anyway, that's like at Urban, that's the only kind of, like, we'll do push-up burpees for days.
Heard you actually, now that you say it, I've heard you say that, and I would say it's potentially even more, I mean, I don't want to, you know, I'm not a quantum physicist, but it's probably even more than 50% gravity. I mean, that's why I'm good at burpees for my wrestling. It's just a sprawl.
Oh,
for
yeah.
Me.
Oh,
and I'm willing to go down hard. Like, that's what you notice at first. It's like, I'm willing to, like, you'll hear me let that air out. Right.
And
that's kind of what I love about it. Like, it makes me feel like I'm in a wrestling match by myself.
Yep.
So I think I don't think what you're saying is wrong. My attitude, if I had a box again, would be like, it's a
do both. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, do both. 100%. It's also our tempo thing. So like prescribing a tempo to the deadlift, blah, blah, blah. All that is kind of where
right. And potentially even, you know, I tell people like, if you can't do 5 strict pull-ups, you have no business kipping.
Yeah.
You can make the same argument about burp. Like there could be a number. Hey, if you can't do
5 strict push-ups,
or, you know, whatever. Yeah. I would have gone higher because I think you can have, develop push-ups faster than pull-ups.
And just basic hinging patterns. We know everyone who kicks in from that burpee and they just round out to stand up, but it just like over a period of time, even unloaded, that's not a great flexion position extension. But go, you know, one thing with PT too, and I'm curious your thoughts on this. The only other thing I like about it is it's a diversification. So in times like COVID, if you had 20% of the gym doing one-on-one training, you probably were able to keep that up, masks, distance. You probably like it. Just it was a nice diversification during COVID, I think, for gyms who had established it. And then you saw a lot of gyms kind of pick it up when their gym was closed and they were open, but they were too small to have the 15 people they needed in because of social distancing. And so they started booking like one-off small group training appointments and stuff like that. So again, that's just one of the other reasons I think PT first for a complex model like CrossFit is a pretty good option. Yes, and also PT is the only increase in payroll that you as a business actually make money on. That's the one thing too. Like you can take a trainer from making 24K a year up to 38 a year, and it actually costs you nothing. And that delta between 24 and 38, you actually make 30% of money on, or whatever your margin is on your PT sessions.
I was going to say, not only does it not cost you money, but you should be making more.
Yes, correct.
I think one of the other issues I have with it is, there's other coaches out there that are like, well, just sell PT. And it's, yes, in theory, that's nice. But also, like, what's your plan to sell more? A lot of people are just selling people this dream of like, hey, and you'll open and, you know, every one of your coaches will have 20 PTs a week. And it's like, cool. Where's that coming from?
Yeah, 100%. And it's because, again, you're advertising group. You're not taking pictures of PT and putting it on your social media. You're showing group. People drive by and they see people running outside in a group. And then they come in the doors and you're like, but one-on-one first. And that's a bait and switch. You have to tell that story. But also, like, I'll get a 2,600 square foot gym, be like, hey, I think I'm going to do PT first. I'm like, you're fucking retarded.
You have no room for that.
I'm like, 50 square feet per PT session. Like, I have a huge facility in the back of Urban, and even when we were doing PT first at the very first, like, quarter when I moved in there, we're still kind of transitioning out of CrossFit, my trainers were not allowed to take up more than 50 square feet. Like, even they're like, I got all this space. I'm like, I don't care. If we're going to do PT, we're going to do it tight and concise. Because, again, I'm testing. This is a laboratory for all these fucking hypotheses, is them spitting out to all these gym owners, number one. Number two, you got to keep PT nice and engaged, because otherwise for gyms that are going to do PT first, when do you think PT is going to happen? During the busy class times, because that's when people want to train. So you got to have a class going on and then be able to run two or three sessions in parallel. So you got to quantify the space needed for that.
Yeah. And something else I'm sure you do well that other coaches aren't doing, that, cool, we'll do PT. And then there's no feedback on that,
yeah,
right? Just like that, like no thought behind it. Oh yeah. Most people are going to want to train between 4 and 7 PM, no different than class time.
Yeah.
Well, what is that going to look like? I've never heard someone say 50 square feet, right? And in hearing that, I don't have any reference. It sounds big, but even still, it's,
it gives enough room for one rower and then other equipment.
And also not making that person feel like you're in a bubble, right? Like,
yes,
you're taking, yeah, up my valuable space. But
yeah,
but that's important. Like, hey, you know, Stu, welcome to the team. Like, your goal is to get more PTs, but I'm not going to tell you, you know, how to get better at that.
Yeah. And I, you know, and once CrossFit got really popular, the last thing I'll say in the PT first, we created a test out sheet. So the day when you bought the PT, we handed you the sheet. We said, these are all the movements we're actually going to review with you. And we're going to keep you in PT until you can audibly recognize the movement and then perform it generally well, not even perfect, because we can cue you once you can audibly recognize it and can do it generally well in the group class.
And yeah, you're not a nuisance anymore.
You're not a nuisance anymore. And if you go and visit your mom over the holidays and you want to take her to the 24/7 fitness, I promise you, you'll be able to teach her how to hinge, because we have taught it to you. Now, the best part for that, for CrossFit affiliate owners listening to this, we would have someone new show up at Urban and they'd be like, yeah, but I did CrossFit for 7 years. And we're like, cool. We require a 30-minute test out for anyone new. It's our 30-minute PT session was $40. And they'd be like, huh? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, here's the sheet. These are all the moves. I can do all these. Cool. Well, it's going to be $40 and you got to do that to test out. What percentage do you think went through the test out flawlessly without any issues? None.
Zero. That's a zero.
So, because again, every gym's like, oh, he does CrossFit, they'll be fine, let's throw him in the class. You don't know what the fuck that means. He could have learned CrossFit from a brick. Like, you have no clue.
Yeah, I would equate it to martial arts. It's like getting, yes, your first stripe. Like, hey, show me an arm bar. Show me, you know, a heel hook. You shouldn't be heel hooking, but, you know, show me a rear naked, yeah, choke, whatever that looks like. Cool. Now you can come to open mat, or now you can come to this class. Because that's the same thing we say. You know, onboarding should get people moving generally safe, but more so it's just assimilating them into this cult of CrossFit.
Yeah,
right?
Awareness, that means, yep.
Hey, when I show up and say we're going to do a hang power snatch, you don't immediately ask me, does that start from the ground? You know, do I have to go, yeah, below parallel? Like, no, I've told you what it is. It's a hang power snatch. You should know that.
Yeah.
And it's because we want to get in so quickly as members, right? That we think about that. But where else in life do you get to bypass the basics?
Do you think with CrossFit really pushing towards helping the obese, the people who are on the sickness end of the continuum, I mean, those individuals can't go jumping in the group class. I mean, you get someone who's morbidly obese, it doesn't make sense to have them in a group class. It's going to be such a modified thing. I mean, like, maybe it does, but like, if that becomes more of the message, like, and you get more of the general population, people trying to avoid sickness, you know, Sean's trying to bridge the gap between healthcare and fitness. If you get more of these people in, I feel like one-on-one is probably number one for their comfort level, because most of those people are not going to go from couch to 25 person class with any kind of comfort level. Yeah, I see it as a natural evolution if you get into those. If you're in the young and sexy, competitive 25 to 38-year-olds, yeah, PT first might not be your thing. But if you're definitely in those populations of people who really need it, like, you look at them, you're like, you're going to die in fucking 8 years. Definitely going to be dead. There's no way. One-on-one is maybe a good idea.
Yeah, and if your demographic is young and sexy, you're probably going to have a really small gym, right? Like, the goal is we need to appeal to those people. So to answer your question, I'd say you're probably, I mean, you use the word morbidly obese, which I do think kind of quantifies, right? It's not just like I'm 20 pounds overweight. We're
sure,
talking,
yeah,
like off the charts.
Yeah, you're fucked.
And I also think you need that one-on-one, because really there needs to be some nutrition dialogue happening anyway.
Yes,
which
I agree.
Probably
lifestyle
isn't happening in that hour class.
No, I agree 100%, man. Jason,
Before you wrap this up, you nailed it. The big thing is make them comfortable. Like, I mean, I didn't start CrossFit like a normal person, right? I mean, I found it, did it myself. most people that are starting, even young and sexy people, there's some fear, intimidation going into it. So you can imagine what a morbidly obese person is feeling. It's probably heightened. So make them more comfortable, right?
Yeah.
Getting into there.
100%. I think about it, like, for all the guys that listen, like, have you ever gone to a yoga class? And they're like, no. I'm like, go to one yoga class and you'll feel like an asshole. Promise you will. Yeah. You won't know
and
any of the names. You'll fall over.
You'll fart.
And you're going to be super embarrassed. You'll be really intimidated. That's kind of how out of shape people feel coming into the gym. Jace, this was dope. Thank you again so much. Always fun just to rap with you. For everyone, if you don't know already, where can they find more of your beautiful face and voice?
Well, if they want to see my pictures, just go to Stu's Instagram. But the one you picked was from my personal Instagram, Coach Jason Ackerman. I've been kind of doing a whiteboard thing where I just put a thought similar to what you're. It's nice to have that kind of, like, that's my lane.
Yeah,
I love it. It's my creative outlet.
I love it.
So if you want kind of hyperbolic statements and absolutes with more just getting a conversation going, go there. Best hour of their day for other stuff.
Absolutely. The only issue is, guys, if you go to the best hour of the day, you are also going to have to look at Fern. So you got to take the good and the bad with this.
You mentioned 50-50. The attractiveness is not 50-50. That's simply ownership. our operating agreement.
Awesome. Brother, thank you again so much, dude. I hope you have a great rest of your week.
You too, Stu. Thank you.